This is the August 18 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. We're also joined by Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net from Windsor, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel from AgMarket.net. He's in Normal, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. Or search us out in your favorite podcast application, places like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, just about anything you can search us out, you'll find our podcast right there. Listen to Commodity Week and the Closing Market Report. Let's begin with this question about last week's USDA reports. We'll start with a number, Matt, for you, because you've been traveling out west. I'm wondering whether you think the USDA's 51.7 for soybeans can be made, and whether their number for yield for corn is good as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think on corn and beans, it's going to be hard to tell. First of all, I think some of the areas that are good are going to be record good. I think you're going to see some outlandish yields where people have got the timely rainfall. We've seen, for instance, we talked about this today before we came on the air about Douglas County yields that came in below a year ago, safely below a year ago, and five-year average. So there's parts of Illinois that aren't perfect. There's parts of Illinois that are fantastic. And so it's going to take a long time to figure out just exactly kind of where these yields go. But I think, you know, I was out in South Dakota this week. We've got a lot of business in the Western Corn Belt. And the bottom line is that there's a lot of folks in the Western Corn Belt that are in a situation like 2012, whereas some of us over here in a situation like 2018, I guess is the best way for me to explain it. Do I think we could hit 175.4? I think that was a fair number, to be honest. I mean, I'm 175 probably right now, so I'm not far from that. As far as beans go, I think it's going to be tough. They got in the ground late, and I do think there's enough dry areas. August hasn't been good enough to enough people that I think that you could get up close to any sort of record yield. I don't think that you get close to 52.
Let's talk a little bit about soybeans. Kurt Kimmel, they managed to have a good day on Friday, despite the large number, but then really fell out of bed this week. Why did that happen?
Well, a lot of the concern is basically China. Some of the domestic demand, the international demand, they're just not buying that million metric ton numbers that they were a year ago. China's economy. Even though the hog numbers are there and hog margins are a little bit better, it's just that they're kind of using that as a headline. But two, there's some rain around, and with the higher yield we saw last week, that's got the trade a little bit on the defensive. But I tell you what, $14 is kind of a swing point in through here. If we can kind of stay above 14, I think we have a chance to regroup and have an old-fashioned dead cat bounce.
Well, tell me about the technical side before we move on to Wayne.
Well, the technical side is we're getting down now. We're in oversold territory. If you look at the chart here, we've got a sideways base or a pattern, wedge pattern starting to form in through here. But probably what's more important is the seasonal tendency. Don't forget that as we get into August, September, oftentimes corn and beans both record some seasonal lows.
This week, last week, the previous week, in the queue coming out of Ukraine, there were many boats. A lot of the beginning of that was of corn being shipped out. Sometimes it made it to its destination. Sometimes it was rejected. Wheat this week managed to really fall out of bed. Is this because there is belief that Ukraine will be able to deliver wheat to the Middle East?
Well, it all started with the Iraqis kicking back and not taking their tender that they had accepted from the U.S. and rejecting it, packing it back that way. We are looking at a lot more wheat there. We're looking at Russian wheat being tremendously big over there. We're seeing the Russians, they're still fighting with their government about their tariffs or their taxes on that as to keeping them somewhat out of the market. But we are seeing a lot of wheat that way that can come out of the Ukraine. You know, the question being is, and we heard a lot talking about shipping with that, we're seeing boats coming out of there, but we're not not seen a lot of boats going back in there because of the insurance rates on the freight going in and out of there. Will we continue to see it? You know, we are looking at that, and Russia is the cheapest price in the Ukraine right now for doing that, and we're going to see if it can come out of there. Wheat has really taken a knock here, and it's really pulled the corn back down a little bit this week, and we need to see some recovery in the wheat market if we're going to get any sort of rally started at all.
So are all three of you of an opinion that there could be an early fall low for corn, soybeans, and wheat would be necessary within that process?
Yeah, I think that's certainly a possibility. The one thing that I continue to point at, especially for producers that I would say are, you know, APH plus type situation, is that don't necessarily throw cold water on $6 and $14, because South America, Brazil's talking about bringing a bunch of acres to the table. Yeah, you're going to back off on corn acres in Argentina. They talked about that towards the end of the week. No questions asked there. But Safrina crop, they're talking 4% more acres. So, you know, my personal opinion is that, yeah, you could have an earlier harvest low. I could see a bounce if you have any weather issues whatsoever as far as South America is concerned. But with that being said, are we really going to say that $6 and $14 aren't good enough? Because if we do say that, we need to understand what the other side of that is, because it could be pretty ugly if you end up with a monster crop coming out of South America.
You know, the one thing that's holding us back right now, Todd, is the weather forecast that we're looking at for the next 10 days. It's going to take the dry areas of the U.S. from 33% down to 20 to 25%. And that's, you know, a good way to finish this crop, to make us give it a little better, feeling good. You know, over the last 3 weeks, Indiana switched from, God, I don't know what I'm going to have. I know it's cut back. You know, we've got tip back over there in areas like that. But boy, have we got rain, and boy, do our beans look better. Boy, does our corn look better. You know, and I can't imagine, you know, for supposedly being a crummy year, you any sort of elevated highways you drive down, it looks like the Rockettes are out there. It's level across there. They're doing the kick, and you can put the board on top of that cornfield. Now, is the corn really there? How good is it going to be? You know, our sweet corn has been tremendously late over there. We're just basically getting into the majority of the sweet corn that way. But what we've seen there has been finished clear out to the end. But most of the guys, as they do go to the field, if they go to the field, as Matt and I were talking about earlier, they're tipped back 1 to 2 inches on a lot of their ears, but they are filled pretty good from there on in. But that's what we're looking at. It's going to be the rain and how we finish.
Yeah, highly variable. Like you say, you can drive down the road there and see a lush green field. Everybody's talking about Illinois lush green, but if you pull back some shucks, it's a different story. But how you average this all out, we're going to be debating this clear into next year. But I think the bottom line is, in through here, kind of looking at the commercial guys, they were just itching, wanting to buy here cheaper. They're starting to get a little bit nervous in through here. And I think as we go into this fall here with plenty of storage around and food security, supply chain issues, that we could be in a situation here where maybe we can have a fall low in through here, move a little higher in December. But as Matt said, they've got some optimistic numbers coming out of that southern hemisphere. So South America's under the gun here to produce. If not, maybe we can see some higher prices as we move into next year.
You came back from the western part of the Corn Belt today. I know that producers probably were talking maybe a little bit about the acreage numbers that came out from USDA, the updated figures from Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota. They didn't change a lot. The FSA figures were delayed. They won't be out until next week on the 22nd. These all get rolled into the October normally USDA crop production report. Will there be any changes really made, do you suppose?
I don't think there's going to be big changes to the upside like a lot of folks originally thought. You know, whenever we've talked to producers, for instance, in North Dakota, what we found is that, you know, due to the weather, a lot of folks decided that they just weren't going to be able to plant what they thought they were going to originally be able to plant. So I think it's going to be tough to get more acreage. Maybe you get, you know, a couple 300,000 here and there. I don't know. It's possible. But at the same time, I think that your trend on yield is probably not going higher. And so, you know, are you going to pick up production in totality? I think that'd be a pretty hard thing to do. Now, on beans, I could believe it more so than corn. You know, as Wayne suggested, I think there are areas that have gotten enough rain that they're going to have some awfully good bean yields. You know, you point to a year like, for instance, 2012, you know, when we finally got that hurricane came up, and we turned, in my opinion, 25 bushel beans into 50 bushel beans. And I do think that as much rain as some areas have had, you could be looking at some yields that are super impressive on beans, but it's a little too late for corn, I think, for most folks. So I don't know that you're going to change that yield around much, but my personal thought, you know, is that maybe you offset with corn, you know, a little bit less production, even though you've got a few more acres. Whereas on beans, if you pick up more acres, I think you could have probably more total production. It could be an interesting thing for sure.
What does bean basis do spot month going through August into September and harvest season at this point? How wide, or does it widen out very much?
Well, I think that we're going to see what demand. I think we're falling off here. I think people are waiting for harvest, and I think we generally see a basis level fall off a little bit here. We're not seeing the demand out of China that we would hope to see by now. If not, we would have been tight right now because we'd moved a lot of beans and along those way that we were looking at. I think we're going to take a big look this week at what the basis does and what the Pro Farmer Tour says coming into next week. The Pro Farmer Tour is going to give us a real indication. They are the boots on the ground. Remember this last USDA did not, that was only satellite information, farmer yields and farmer surveys in that way. So this is going to be the biggest on-the-ground survey with boots looking at different things and people that aren't really associated with it. It isn't going to be the seed corn dealer that might throw an extra ear in or do something along the way, but it's going to be people that don't know whose farm that is and what's going on. I think we're going to see a lot of activity and a lot of people watching Twitter more so than this thing going on next week with Pro Farmer Tour.
Brian Grady will be on the eastern leg. Out on the western leg of that tour, we'll have Sherman Newland to talk to on a daily basis. We'll put that up on the Twitter feed as well.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I talked to some growers in Sioux Falls, Mitchell area this week. And one thing that we all talked about is that the western leg, which starts in Sioux Falls, goes down through Grand Island, Nebraska, over to Nebraska City, up through Spencer, and then finishes in Minnesota. The first 3 days of that tour are not going to see a lot of good corn, period. I mean, you're looking at a lot of challenging yields in that part of the world, and it's going to be very interesting, as Wayne said. I think the trade's going to be watching it very closely. Now, on the east side of the Corn Belt, you know, you might say, well, Illinois looks great. A lot of Indiana looks pretty good. You know, Ohio started out horribly, and I think that they've healed up some from that. But I don't think that the eastern Corn Belt is actually going to have the leg on the eastern side of things is necessarily going to be outlandish. So I'm with Wayne. This Pro Farmer Tour is going to be watched very closely. August, the USDA doesn't get in the field. Pro Farmer does, and they're actually in the field. They're pulling back ears, counting ears, and they're going to tell us what they think yield is. And I think it's going to carry more weight this year than we've seen it carry in a while.
And again, we'll be following along with that Pro Farmer Tour during the closing market report each and every business day. Again, you can find that at willag.org. Brian Grady from Pro Farmer will update us from the eastern leg of the tour. Sherman Newland will be on the western leg, and he's going to start early. He's headed out this weekend and will be traveling through North Dakota, which is not on the tour, but will give us an update of what that crop looks like. Really important because, generally speaking, the largest bean producing county in the nation is right there around Fargo, so we'll want an update from him to see what that looks like. Now let's talk a little bit more about what producers should be doing with the crop. I'll stay with beans and then we'll switch to corn, but let's start with beans. Those soybeans that will have to go across the scale, farmers will have to make a decision very quickly after they go across the scale what they're going to do with them. At this point in time, what do you think they should do?
Yeah, I was really surprised the change in the elevator's attitude here. It's, you just don't average them out. You got to move them. So producers are going to be under the gun to make a decision right away. I think everybody's a little bit different. Of course, if guys got bins, they're going to put some beans in the bin to store them. But I think you're in a situation now where you got to probably move them if the price is still high. Try to take advantage of some early basis levels, because what we're looking at is when you look at the carry, you look at November futures versus July futures, you're only talking 8-9 cents, so there's not a whole lot of carry in the marketplace. So I think if you're in a situation, move and do some type of replacement strategy and kind of have a position on in case South America has weather problems.
Kurt said it all right there. There's no carry out there. sell them at a decent price. And you know, you can own a July call because there's not that carry built in. A lot of times people say, well, I'll buy the July, but you're paying 50 cents carry. It's not there this year. I think that the other thing we have to look at very, very, very seriously is we are not seeing activity from China. They are not buying what we're hoping they're buying. Everybody says, well, they've got to come back. South America is producing a lot more, are planning to produce a lot more. They've made a lot more inroads of trying to do more business there. And Ms. Pelosi's trip to Taiwan did not help any relationships. Not being political, just talking about the fact that they are having maneuvers, they're doing this, we're talking about that and whatever along the way. And I think that they are going to hold off as much as they can just for their political atmosphere towards the U.S. and showing us that they don't have to come here.
Yeah, and so I'm with these guys. And here's the thing, as we talk, beans closed at 14.05 on Thursday in the quarter, I believe. But regardless, 14.05, you know, anybody who sits here and says, well, I don't know if I want to sell beans. You know, 2 years ago, we were looking at bean prices sub $9 at this time. You know, before the derecho hit, I mean, bean prices were just pathetic, corn prices as well. And so, you know, obviously things have changed significantly. But the bottom line is, if you're harvesting beans and they're decent at all, and I think most people that are listening to this are going to have awfully good beans. It's, in my opinion, you get some beans sold, get the cash in hand. If you want to put something in play to be able to participate if the market goes on up, absolutely you can do so. Whether it's a call spread, you know, like a, you know, a $14-$16 call spread, or even a $15-$17 call spread, something like that, that's going to have a limited amount of money that you're going to put up. You're not going to have any risk if the market turns around and goes south. And guess what? You know, if it goes on up and you can make another $1.50, great. But here's the thing. If it's $14 on the board and you got a 30-cent basis and you got 13.70 beans and you invest maybe 20, 30 cents, the worst you're going to have happen is 13.40 or 13.50 beans times an 8 APH plus yield. In my opinion, that's a winner.
And corn?
Yeah, so on corn, you know, our group, we've been pretty aggressive on corn at times. 60% is where we're at right now. We've encouraged guys to get to 60% of actual production. I mean, APH is, of course, where we started at. But regardless, in my opinion, if you're not going to get this stuff stored, I have no issue with going ahead and selling some corn as well. I mean, again, you're looking at $6 plus. I mean, we were pushing $6.20 at times on the day that we talked here. I mean, here's the thing. That's a heck of a price compared to most producers put the crop in the ground cheaper than what the worst was. We all know that fertilizer was excessively high at times this year, but most producers at least had some cheaper fertilizer bought. Profit margins with APH plus yields are incredible whenever you're looking at $6 plus basis the D's. And so, in my opinion, don't throw cold water on extremely profitable prices. Most producers in 22, in my opinion, are going to be as profitable as what they've been since 2012, and that's saying something.
Yeah, I think you got to push the pencil and kind of see where you're at in through here. One thing that's kind of interesting, a lot of these elevators haven't set fall storage rates just yet. A lot of them are having meetings this week or next week. I think they're waiting for somebody to go first. And I think you got to look at the storage rate and plus two drying. Some guys say, well, we're going to have the same drying rate as last year. But long story short, as Matt mentioned there, you know, this pencil's out pretty good. I think you got to be this 50, 60% sold. But I do believe, though, that I wouldn't sell on a week 30, 40 under. I'd store it in the bin, debate the commercial storage. I think you can have a seasonal appreciation in December. But once again, South America is going to dictate after that.
Kurt is very much right in what he mentioned in drying rates being the same. If you price propane lately, folks, they're going to be higher. They've got to be higher. And I think what both the guys have said, I agree wholeheartedly with. I think if you need some cash flow and you haven't got up to their levels, some sales at harvest are going to be good. But look and see. I think that there's going to be a little bit of basis appreciation or not appreciate. I think there's going to be some bid up for some early corn. I think that there's going to be some people looking for some stuff out there that aren't really well covered yet. I think we're going to see the ethanol markets, the ethanol plants are going to come back in, and they're going to want to own some of this stuff. But when they offer you a real good deal, don't think it's going to go on up another 40 or 50 cents. Take that for your first little batch out of there and try to be done. And remember, if you can get anything with half-cost drying or anything with the way the cost of propane is going to be, those are going to be things to take a look at.
Once producers start to put corn in the bin in particular, they tend not to want to open that door back up until it has to go to the elevator. Do you have any advice for them about watching prices and when to actually make that decision? Because sometimes it's really hard.
You know, I think when they put it in the bin, if they've got an objective and a goal for that corn, and it hits that goal and objective, not moving the goalpost might be a pretty good thing to try to do, because we're horrible about it. I mean, as producers, we move goalposts all the time. And so, you know, if you put it in the bin, and let's say Brazil gets in a situation where, you know, I mean, a lot of folks are talking La Nina, third year in a row. You get a third year in a row La Nina, and let's say that it impacts the safrinha crop more so than what it does the first crop. If that's the case, and a producer gets the opportunity in January or February, earlier than what they typically want to be able to let loose of that corn, by all means, let's go ahead and do something with it. Because I know a lot of producers that open the bin doors, a month after they put it in, just simply due to the fact that the opportunity arises. Don't be afraid to take advantage of it.
Yeah. On the flip side, those who put it at the elevator say, all right, paid the in charge, I'm just waiting it out, but they sometimes miss an opportunity there as well.
Yeah, the psychology is, I get a phone call. I've got between now and tomorrow to decide what to do with my storage. Should I sell or should I hang on and pay another month's storage? And that's a tough one. And going into the fall, typically that storage pays, but man, the storage is high this year. I think you need to reevaluate it. But yeah, don't forget about it. You don't want to be sitting around because, for example, if Russia would let China take boats in and out of that Ukraine area, what will the market do? I mean, there's some black swans out there. You don't want to forfeit or give up opportunities at these higher prices.
Are there reasons that you would want to re-own this crop or portions of it you sold today? I mean, today, are there reasons that you would want to do that?
Well, for one thing, the last 2 years, it's worked really well. And so most folks say, hey, it worked for me good 2 years in a row. Now, I think all three of us would agree that what works 1 year isn't going to always work every year. But the thing is this. If you're selling, again, let's say you're getting 570 cash or 580 cash, whatever it is, spend 20 cents. And now all you've got is, worst case scenario, 560 with a chance to make maybe another buck and a half, depending on how you set your strategy up. Absolutely. I mean, I don't see an issue with it, especially if you've got enough meat on the bone and you want to take a swing at it. Go ahead and take a swing at it, because all you're going to do is you're going to give yourself an opportunity to stay in the game if something happens.
I agree with Matt wholeheartedly, and I agree with his idea of not spending 85 cents on an option, 20 or 25 on an option strategy. And I think, remember that when you do this. This is good market management and whatever. I mean, yes, you might make more money if you spent the 85 cents and buy the closer to the money one, but you can also lose all of that 85 cents too. So, you know, that otherwise gives you more chance. I think there's opportunity possibilities out here, but we have so many black swans flying or swimming around the world right now. You know, what's the recession going to do? What is the war in Ukraine going to do? What is China going to do? What's Taiwan going to do? What's our government going to do? I mean, you know, are we going to raise the interest rates? Are we going to do all these things? There's so many things could be a black swan out here. Take some good profit. Put your idea that you can take advantage of if the white swan comes along instead of the black swan.
Once in a while, once every decade or so, it seems that there is an opportunity looking forward into the next year that comes much earlier than usual for the 2023 crop. That started earlier this summer. Even Gary Schnittke at the University of Illinois said, hey, if you're going to price out really high-priced fertilizer, you might want to cover those costs. Are we still at that point?
Well, there's a lot of time between now and then. There's a ton of moving parts, and I found it interesting here visiting with some of these fertilized guys, and they're starting way back when, basically, whenever an ag company would have a meeting, the first thing they discuss is price of corn. And it seems like whenever there's been good years, our inputs went up. When poor years, maybe inputs went down. But these guys are bold enough now saying, okay, price of fertilizer and anhydrous is going to depend on the price of corn. So I'm starting to get in the ballpark here. Instead of buying heating oil to hedge your fuel or doing all this hedging or prepaying, I'm in the opinion just buy corn to hedge your input costs for this coming crop year, because they're all based off the price of corn. But there's inflation, there's a lot of moving parts in here. If it pencils out, you can lock into it, but I'd be flexible.
So you'd buy an option and double your crop, a portion of your crop up to pay for the fertilizer? Is that what you're thinking?
What I'm saying is, I don't know about doubling up, but in order to hedge your inputs, there's this idea that maybe you need to be long corn, because a lot of these ag people are sort of basing their prices off what the price is on corn or beans.
The big fertilizer companies want a share of whatever that crop is worth. As the crop goes up in price, they raise the price of their fertilizer. The international people do. I've known a lot of the people in the fertilizer industry, some of them that were on the international level, and that's more true than you'd want to say. Kurt hit it right on the head.
Well, you know, another thing, I mean, these guys have covered it, but you look at nat gas, and a lot of folks think nat gas is going to 12 or 14 bucks. I don't know that it is, but right now you're pushing 9, 9.50, you know, on days. And here's the thing, I mean, what is the biggest factor as far as anhydrous prices are concerned? Nat gas. And so no question in my mind that if nat gas skyrockets, I'll tell you what, you better be cautious as to what anhydrous is going to cost. Now, I have gotten prices here this week from the folks that we deal with on the farming side of things. And, you know, they're averaging around 11 and a quarter to 11.50 full service anhydrous. And I'll tell you what, I think as the fall goes on, if nat gas does what some folks are predicting, that's going to look awfully cheap.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. We'll start with Kurt Kimmel from agmarket.net.
I think Matt and Wayne both hit the nail on the head just a few minutes ago there. If you, what's worse feeling is you sell something that goes higher. Well, I'd go ahead and make some sales, but defend $7 and $16. That way, if it goes on higher, you're covered. And I think it's more important to do that, because your downside risk is phenomenal in here, and you want to make sure you can be cash flow fluent through here. So there's a lot of great strategies out there. Sit down with somebody and have a plan.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
I'm generally not the type that says watch the crop tour, but the Pro Farmer Tour this week, coming week, is going to be one of the biggest pricing opportunities we're going to have this fall.
And Matt Bennett of agmarket.net.
I think I'll just reiterate something I said earlier. $6 and $14, they may not be the high, but they're awfully good prices. So let's not throw cold water on them.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Wayne Nelson, Kurt Kimmel, and Matt Bennett. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.